Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to Money for Lunch. I guarantee, I know this is huge, but I guarantee that today's show will dramatically, instantly better your life. It's a bold statement, I know. I'm telling you, today's show, you're getting it for free. You're going to walk away with $2,000, maybe $3,000 worth of really good, valuable, fun information. I kid you not. Hey, guys, let's see. This weekend, which is just a day away, a couple of days away, depending on, you know, whether it's Friday or Saturday for you. But either way, the much-anticipated World War Z, the zombie invasion movie with Brad Pitt, is coming out and expected to break all sorts of records. Will you be attending this movie this weekend? If you are, hey, send me a Twitter or check me out on Facebook. Let me know what you'll be doing. Today on the show, we have one of our regular contributors, Mary King. Mary King is an attorney who specializes in solving IRS problems. She's also a best-selling author of the book Protect and Defend. Mary's career as an attorney began in 1993 after graduating from Stetson University College of Law. Her career in law has primarily focused in IRS problem solving as well as mortgage foreclosure defense. Mary has been practicing law for 19 years and enjoys helping clients moving the dark cloud of the IRS. As always, Mary King, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. Hey, you know what? I wanted to, get your thoughts on this. I mean, the hurricane season has officially started, and in other parts of the country, we have seen other natural disasters. From a taxpayer point of view, what should a taxpayer do to protect their tax records?
Well, there's a couple things that people can do. The first thing is to create a backup set of records electronically, you know, scan them and put them on a flash drive or a CD, you know, something that, you know, if a disaster is impending, they can, you know, just pick them up, put them in a suitcase or something and take them away so that they don't have a lot of papers to be hauling around. You know, the other thing is obviously to, you know, document your furniture and so forth in your house so that if your house is destroyed or something, you will have something for, you know, insurance purposes. The other thing is obviously you want to update your emergency plan so that if you do have some sort of hurricane, fire or something coming, you know, you will have a plan to evacuate and know what's going on, and you'll have all of your records and your so forth. You're ready to go.
Gotcha. Hey, let me ask you this, because I know that one of the things that is vital when dealing with IRS, and you mentioned already, and that is, you know, your documentation. I mean, you know, protecting your tax records. When you're dealing with people who are in trouble with the IRS, how many times do you find that one of the reasons that they're in trouble or can't defend them, themselves, is primarily because they have no records?
I find that a lot, and that's why it is so critical to have copies of your, you know, your receipts, your income records, your bank statements, you know, anything that can document both income and expenses.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm conducting an audit right now, and, you know, some of the issues that are coming up are, you know, both income and expense issues. So you want to be able to have records, you know, of both income and expenses.
Right. You know what, and it's amazing to me that this happens so often, because I think if you're a young person, inexperienced, let's say you're 19 or 20, you know, let's say 21, I'll give you a little wiggle room. You know, you may not be accustomed to dealing with the IRS, but it's at one point, this IRS thing is not a surprise. Keeping records shouldn't be a surprise, and it's kind of discouraging to find that so many people just have nothing.
It's very surprising. It's very surprising when I see it with business people as well, because you would expect that people who run business would be used to keeping records. But I see it both with, you know, individual tax situations as well as business tax situations.
That's incredible. Anyway, so I kind of derailed you a little bit, and I want to bring you back to this because I start talking about the hurricane season, and something else that came to mind is this. Every time there's a disaster, you know, especially now we've seen some recent tragedies, taxpayers also become victims of scam artists. I mean, there's so many, I guess, scams out there impersonating charities. What's your take on this? What should a taxpayer be aware of when donating money?
Well, you're absolutely correct. I mean, there, unfortunately, you know, people do take advantage of these situations, and it's really sad. But what people should do is donate to qualified charities. Donate to, you know, the real charities that are out there. You can actually go to the IRS.gov and find the names of the qualified charities to check to be sure, you know, you're donating to a real 501c3 charity. Be aware of charities that sound like qualified charities but maybe aren't. Absolutely do not give out your personal financial information who solicits a charitable contribution from you. You should be the one who contacts the charity initially. And the other thing is don't send cash. Send something that can be tracked in case, you know, you are audited. You know, whether it's a credit card or a check or something, so that it can be tracked.
Right. You know, I started to chuckle as soon as you said don't send cash. And I chuckled because, you know, again, it's one of those things that, you would think never happens, but probably happens more often than anybody would realize.
Unfortunately, it does.
It's amazing. I, believe it or not, and the reason why I bring this up is, believe it or not, I've actually had people send me cash here to our office to buy stuff. They send me cash in the mail. I'm thinking, really?
That actually is amazing.
It's amazing. It's just like, you know, it just blows me away that, you know, money order, a check, I don't know. There's just so many other ways of transferring money available with today's technology.
Oh, there is, absolutely. I mean, you know, even PayPal. I mean, but you know, the best way, obviously, is by check or credit card, so that it provides documentation of the donation.
Right, right. All right. So I'm going to switch hats again because, again, since you deal with solving IRS problems, I want to talk about this because I know that a lot of people are terrified with this, and that is, if a taxpayer has penalties and interest, what can be done about it? I mean, the IRS recently modified the penalty rules. Walk me through this. What's going on?
Well, in April of this year, the IRS modified the first-time abatement policy, and essentially what they said was that if taxpayers have never been in trouble with the IRS before, they can get interest or penalty abatement on a tax issue. One of the criteria is that they have to be current with all filing requirements. If they are also required to pay estimated taxes, they must be current on their estimated tax requirements as well. It's nothing really surprising. Essentially, what the IRS is saying is that you just must be in compliance in order to require to get this first-time penalty abatement.
Right, right. And you know what? Let me ask you this. With your experience dealing with the IRS, you've been doing this for a while now. Do you find that if you're dealing with a knowledgeable agent, it makes a difference. Meaning, is the IRS, again, they're nothing more than a entity filled with humans. And so do you find it that sometimes you can get things accomplished easier dealing with somebody who is, I guess, amenable to work with versus somebody who is just curmudgeon?
Well, I would say that when you're dealing with the IRS, it really just depends on the agent that you get. Well, it's like everything else, you know.
Yeah, that's why I said that. It is like everything else, right? I mean, you know, you might deal with somebody who is going through, you know, through an what do you call it? Just had a fight with their spouse, and now you're their first phone call of the day. It's not going to be as pleasant.
Well, and that's true. I mean, just think about it. When you go to the store, I mean, you may get a cashier that's had a really rotten day. So,
right.
And you know, it's like you said, everybody's human, so it's just like that.
Okay, so. Let me ask you this. Are there other ways to obtain penalty abatement?
Besides the first-time penalty abatement, there are a variety of different ways that you can obtain penalty abatement. They're all set out in the Internal Revenue Manual. And so when I have clients that come in to see me, we look at what types of penalty abatement that they may qualify for. And that's one of the items that I go through when I look at my clients to see what types of penalty abatement that they may qualify for. And then we can request that according to those qualifiers in the Internal Revenue Manual.
Gotcha. All right. If you need to contact the IRS this summer, I understand that they're going to be closed quite a bit. What's going on as a result of the cuts and the sequester and stuff like that? Walk us through what's happening.
Well, as like you said, as a result of the sequester and the budget cuts, the IRS is actually going to be closed for several days this summer. And what's going to happen is all the 800 numbers are going to be shut down. No one's going to be answering them. The service centers are going to be closed. Now, if you have a filing deadline or if you've received a deadline from the IRS, you will still have to mail in your documents or whatever by those deadlines.
Right.
But on the first shutdown was May 24th. The next one was June 14th. Those days obviously have already passed. But the next days will be July 5th, July 22nd, and August 30th. So if you have scheduled to go to the IRS on those days or what have you, you'll have to schedule another day.
Wow. And what do you call it? Some people may get the wrong idea. Really, these are just scheduled days off. Like you said, they're just shutting it down for the day. You still, as you mentioned, you still have to get your documents in. You still have to maintain whatever promises you made. The only difference, really, that's going to affect the taxpayer is you're going to have to reschedule around these days, correct?
Correct.
All right. We're basically out of time, but I want to give out your website. It's taxlawyerflorida.com, taxlawyerflorida.com. And if you have questions about your tax situation, contact Mary Keene at taxlawyerflorida.com, and she can talk to you over the phone, and she can talk to you from anywhere, correct?
Absolutely.
All right. Mary Keene, as always, good to have you on the show. Great information. Thank you for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you very much. It was great speaking with you.
All righty. Guys, we are off and running. Great information about being prepared for hurricane season and also about just keeping your documents ready. If you have questions, contact Mary Keene. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be right back talking with Doug Eastland right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, Doug Eastland, also a best-selling author and one of our regular contributors, one of our newest contributors. Doug Eastland is a top-producing realtor serving the Central Texas market. Doug has been helping clients buy and sell homes for over 17 years. Doug is also, as I mentioned, a best-selling author on real estate in his newly released book, The Ultimate Home Buyer's Guide. Doug Eastland, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, thanks for having me back.
You bet. All right, let me ask you this. What is the most important factor a buyer or a seller should consider before they choose an agent to represent them?
Bert, probably the most important thing you should think about is an experience in the type of either listing that you have, home that you own, or type of home that you might purchase. And by experience, I'm not talking about any realtor who's had their license for 30 years. I'm talking about a realtor who, if you're buying a home on a golf course or interested in golf course properties, find a realtor who's got some experience selling golf course properties. If you're looking for a downtown condo, something like that, then you want to make sure that you've got a realtor who's either qualified or experienced in selling downtown condos or knows a little bit about it. Not just somebody who's got experience, but experience in what you're looking for.
Right, because you know what, and it's funny you should mention this, because this makes, to me, a lot of sense, simply because we have become a society of specialties, haven't we? I mean, you no longer go to a shoe store and buy shoes. You go to a running store to buy running shoes. You go to a dress shoe store to buy dress shoes. It's no longer
– Exactly right.
You know, yeah.
If everybody in town wanted the most experienced realtors, there would be only one realtor in every market, but that's just not the case.
Right.
So find somebody that suits exactly what you're looking for, or either trying to buy or sell.
All right. Let me ask you this. With your experience, what do you feel is the worst mistake a seller can make when choosing their listing agent?
Oh, that's easy. Well, just like we said above, one who doesn't have the experience in that type of property, but probably more important than that, an agent who's just going to recommend the highest list price for you. So if you interview three or four realtors and you're going to pick one based on who just says they can get you the most amount of money, that's probably the worst mistake you can do. A home's only going to sell for what somebody's willing to give you, and an accurate or an experienced realtor should be able to advise you on what the market should bring or what the house should bring in today's market. So don't just pick one based on who tells you the most amount of money. It's only going to sell for what it's going to sell for or what somebody's willing to give you.
You know what, and I think that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think that sometimes when you're selling a house, there's that myth that you're always going to make money on the house. I mean, that, you know, it's not always true. I mean, I've had the pleasure of buying and selling many homes, and sometimes you break even. Sometimes you even lose a little bit of money because you need to get out of the house and the market is soft, and you know, maybe you're, you know, you don't want to put the money into your house to be competitive with the market, and so you're going to sell it at a small loss or maybe even at a big loss. You know, isn't that the myth that you're always going to make money?
Yeah, well, that's the hope that everybody does, but that's just not the reality most of the time. What buyers don't care about is what you need to sell your house for so you can get your next house, or how much you paid, or what you have in this house. They just care about what's the value of your house, and if there's another house out there that might be exactly the same, apples to apples, for less money. So all the other factors about what you need, what you have to have, things like that, we just don't even consider that anymore.
Right. Yeah, you know what, and I've always thought that was funny. You know, why would I care that you need X, you know, to make your other deal happen? I mean, that is not
right.
A selling benefit to me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, and that's where an experienced realtor can guide you through that process about, you know, that's no matter what somebody's willing to give you or what you have, it has to appraise, and it has to be either at or below market value, or you're just not going to sell the house.
Right. All right, let me ask you this. What should any potential buyer do before starting the search for a new home?
Well, I think any buyer, before you start driving around town just looking at signs and calling on property, you need to select the agent that you want to represent you in that transaction. Again, one with experience. And you want to go into their office, sit down and talk about your situation, your motivation, your ability to buy, and he can hook you up with a local lender and get pre-approved for the loan. You have to have two things to buy a house right now. You have to have the motivation and the ability to buy. So motivation is I'd like to buy one in the near future, and I'm pre-approved. That's the perfect buyer. If you are waiting on the lotto to hit, you know, we don't need to be looking at houses now. So sit down with a realtor and talk about your expectations and make sure everybody's on the same page before you start driving around looking at houses.
Right. And let me ask you this, because I know things have changed. So if I come to you and I want you to represent me in buying a home, the first, you know, you're going to say, hey, okay, Bert, I can help you, but one of the things that I need you to do first is be pre-qualified or pre-approved for a loan, correct?
Correct, right. And unless you're paying cash, which is rare in my market anyway, and you talk to a local lender and you find out what you can qualify for. Now, the caution there is a lot of times people qualify for a lot more than they need to spend, and they get themselves house poor or in big trouble. So, but you at least know the ceiling you can purchase, and you don't need to go look into houses much higher than that. There's just no need. You're going to like the more expensive houses most of the time, so you don't want to kind of get yourself excited and have to drop back down to a realistic situation.
Right. You know, it's funny you should say that. I had a situation where here I am buying a house in the Houston market, and I qualified for for a fairly decent size house or whatever price, and and the real estate agent, you know, what do you call it, was aware of that because I, you know, hey, I'm pre-approved at this rate, but here's my budget, here's my personal comfort zone, here's my personal budget. And every house he showed me was at my approved price or higher.
Of course.
And I kept saying, no, I want to stay here in this budget just to avoid what you said, where you have this giant mortgage that you cannot pay or it's sucking you dry or whatever. I just, you know, and it's amazing that this guy, eventually we had to fire him. He just wouldn't listen, would not accept anything. He was just interested in his commission.
Well, yeah, the commission was more important than your well-being at that point. And you did the right thing, I think, and I'm not going to pick on realtors, but it's, you know, if you're uncomfortable at that point, he's not listening to your needs, then you need to change at that point right away, sooner
Absolutely.
Than later.
And it brings me up to this question. If someone is listening today and is interested in buying or selling a home and would like to speak with an experienced agent in their area, how could they be assured that they're headed in the right direction?
Well, Bert, if you don't already know an experienced agent that you have a good relationship with, if you could send me an email at doug@eastlandsystems.com. That's our coaching and training company. We have a service we provide for you for free. We'll ask you a few questions about, you know, where do you live? What are you looking for? What price range are you comfortable in? Then we will do the research for you and hook you up with an experienced agent like we've been talking about. It's a free service we offer to anybody in the nation.
Man, that, you know what, I love that. I love that for two reasons. A, it's smart. It's just good marketing. It's good, we'll call it public relations. Here you are, EastlandSystems.com. You know, I can call them, and I can get something solved for free, and you never know what comes from that, right? I mean,
exactly,
you know, we may never do
business. There's no obligation for anything like that.
Right.
It's just a start. We can head you in the right direction.
I love that. I think that's great. I think it's a great example of helping your customers or, let me say, helping the marketplace with customers that may never be your customers.
Sure. Well, that's the intent.
I love it. All right, let me ask you this. Where do you see real estate market heading? What's your take on this?
Well, right now interest rates are inching up a little bit. They're still fairly low in the low fours in our area. But as we see them inching up, that should tell the market to do two things. The buyers who are sitting on the fence waiting on rates to go down should not be waiting on that anymore. It's not going down. And if you're going to buy, it's still a great time because the rates are still low. So get off the fence, and if you're planning to buy, buy. If you're selling, you need to price your house properly to sell before the rates do get a lot higher and the market might slow down. So we're kind of on the cusp now. It's no matter what side of the fence you're on, get off of the fence. If you're going to sell, sell, take advantage of the low rates. If you're going to buy, do the same thing before they get too high.
Yeah.
But the market,
you know,
is hot. I mean, I'm speaking Central Texas anyway. It's we're selling houses pretty much as fast as we can list, not on a two-day basis, but it's a whole lot better than it was 2 or 3 years ago for sure.
Sure. And what are the current rates? Because I know at one point they were like ridiculous, and have they are they still at a ridiculous low rate?
Probably 6 months ago we were in the low threes, which is it's not free money, but that's pretty close to it in our market. And now
sure.
we're probably a closed a couple yesterday. They were in the 4.25s, 4.35, somewhere in that range around here for a 30-year fixed. But that's
which is still a
very
smoking
low
deal.
Rate. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a great deal. It's, you know, there's no reason not to based on rates.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let me ask you this. With the success of your first release, do you have plans to write another book in the near future?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we're already in the process. The first book was obviously The Ultimate Home Buyer's Guide, which immediately says you need a seller's guide, and that's what we're working on now. So we're compiling all the information on how we can help sellers across the nation sell their house, how to choose a realtor, how to price it properly, how to stage, and things like that. And we're also, and I have been for years, compiling information, just funny stories that we hear from around the nation of the things that happen to realtors on a daily basis. So I think the target market for that is just going to be realtors, but it should be interesting to hear some of the stuff that happens to us.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? It's amazing. And I think that once you write a book, it becomes kind of addictive. It's something that, you know, you think about. I don't know about you. When I started venturing out as an author, I was afraid that, man, I wasn't going to be good enough, that people were going to laugh and nobody was going to buy and, you know, and all that other stuff. And I kind of did what you did. I got involved with a couple other people and I wrote a chapter in a book, and that was like the, what do you call it? The way I could still, move towards my goal. At the same time, not take the entire risk of, you know, my first book being a dud. And to me, it was a great way to enter into the book writing market, so to speak.
Right. Well, I remember the day I got the call when some of my peers said, hey, we want you to help us write this book. I'm like, you know, guys, I've never done this. I don't know anything about that. And we all just said, hey, none of us are experts at writing a book, but we know a little bit about real estate. Let's just go forward. You know, there was a need for it, so that's exactly what we did. And you're right, it's contagious. Now, what's next, what's next? Just think about it all day long.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're right. For me, I'll see something or I'll hear a phrase. I'm thinking, ooh, that would be a great title of a book. I could just, you know,
right.
you could just like you said, you constantly pops up. Hey, let me ask you this.
Yeah. Sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
When it comes to flipping houses, you know,
right?
I know in the beginning of the segment you're saying, hey, find yourself somebody that's an expert in what area you're in versus, you know,
right.
if it's a luxury home or whatever. What's your take when you're dealing with flipping houses? The same advice, find somebody who knows how to flip houses.
Oh, exactly right. And somebody who's got a little construction background would be helpful for a realtor or knows a little bit about construction. And what I mean by that, if you're going to walk through a house and you think, Doug, we can buy this house cheap, what's it going to take to fix it is always a question you get asked. You better have a pretty good idea what it would take to bring it up to market standards. So if you're going to – we always start with the end in mind. If you want to make $20,000 on a house when you flip it, okay, then you know it's going to take $50,000 to fix it. Then it kind of gives you a number that you can't pay over this for a certain house. So
right.
It goes back to you need to sit down with your realtor, tell him what you expect, what you're looking for, and there's tons of houses out there like that. But you have to start with the end in mind, and the realtor has to know a little bit about what it's going to take to get it to market value, and at the end of the day, what's the most that house could sell for. From that information, then you can start making offer on flip houses. So.
Gotcha. All right. Hey, Doug, great to have you here as a contributor. Look forward to your information and look forward to working with you. Guys, I want you guys to contact Doug. Even if you're not in Texas, but you want to find a good realtor that will fit your needs, let Doug and his team walk you through there. You can go to eastlandsystems.com. That's EASTLAND systems.com. Doug Eastland, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you very much, Bert. Talk to you soon.
All righty. Guys, we are off and running. Great stuff there by our two latest contributors. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew. You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, poor thing. He's kind of awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
And we're going to be talking to Mr. Bill Bartman. Bill Bartman is a highly recognized and awarded businessman, and he's got a very interesting story. I want you guys to listen to this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bert, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Bill, I know a lot of our listeners may not have heard your story, so before we get into it, and we're going to be talking about how to get out of credit card debt quickly, but before we get to that, give us a little bit about your background, a little bit about your story.
Well, certainly, and I guess we could start with the old standard rags to riches, but everybody's heard those stories so many times, they're almost like chopped liver anymore. So we don't call mine rags to riches, more like rats to riches. We grew up in a neighborhood where there were more rats per capita than there were people. But from there, fortunately, even though I was a high school dropout, spent 5.5 years in high school, I was an alcoholic by the time I was 17, I'm essentially deaf and wear hearing aids to hear about half of what goes on around about me, and grew up on welfare and poverty, and left home when I was 14. I managed to finally get my boat righted, as they would call it, and honestly, Bert, it happened because I met the woman of my life, the lady I met when I was 14 and she was 11. We dated for 10 years, and we've been married now for 36, and I give her all the credit in the world for kicking my rump, so to speak, back to the system. I got a GED. With my GED, I managed to get into college on probation, graduated on probation 4 years later, got into law school on probation, flunked out, got back in, finally graduated on probation, and with that, where Kathy and I have, over the course of our life, we've been blessed and fortunate that we've been able to have some pretty significant business success. In 1986, we went broke. I live in Oklahoma, and we were in the oil and gas business, and the price of oil went from $40 a barrel down to $14, and we went flat, bankrupt, broke, and from there we saw an opportunity, the same opportunity that's going on right now. We saw the economy being in the tank. We saw massive numbers of people being unemployed and banks failing. And so we started buying bad debt. We started buying charged-off credit cards for literally a nickel on the dollar. And with that, over the next 12 years, we created a billion-dollar company. Kathy and I became the 25th wealthiest people in America, members of the Forbes 400. And fortunately, we have won a whole list of business awards, none of which will buy you a cup of coffee anywhere, but they're real pretty when they hang on the wall.
Well, you know, it's good to be recognized by your peers. I think it does say a little bit, but you're right. When it comes down to it, it doesn't buy a cup of coffee. So tell us, Bill, you went from literally from rats to riches, as you like to say. You've been married to Kathy for 36 years?
36, yeah. Which means she had to get a Purple Heart or something.
That's right. Well, you know what? I think it's kind of cool that you give her all the credit. That is an amazing thing, how women can affect us.
Absolutely, Bert. You know, and it's so understated. I mean, you know, the old adage of behind every successful man, there's a woman. Well, that is so much baloney. Kathy has never been behind me. She's never been in front of me. She's always been alongside of me. And people who have great relationships, those are the ones who more often than not are the ones who are great successes in life. So isn't there a lesson there? You know, get a relationship, keep a relationship, work a relationship, and then maybe the rest of your life will fall in place.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's very difficult to have success outside if you're not having success inside the home.
Oh, amen. Absolutely.
All right, well, let's get to it. Tell us about how to get out of credit card debt quickly.
Well, here is the quickest way possible, and it kind of rubs against the norm, and I don't want people to think I'm preaching some kind of financial anarchy or something when I tell them that, but remember now, the business that we created was buying charged-off credit cards, and we bought 4.5 million individual accounts, so I have some background here. What I'm suggesting, for people who are so far underwater that they can't see out, and, you know, that has a different definition for different people, but if you look at your own finances and say, at the job I have right now, the way things are going, I am so far in. It doesn't matter how you got there. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. But if that's where you're at, you have to look at some pretty extraordinary situations to get out of the hole you're in. And one of the things you can do is, and here it comes, quit paying your credit card bills. Now, when you quit paying your credit card bills, it will hurt your credit rating. Oh, boy, there it is almost an immediate thing. But the truth of the matter is, Bert, if somebody's that far upside down, they already have already hurt their own credit rating. And so one more little ding on it isn't probably going to make a big difference to them. Now, conversely, if your credit is good, you'd never want to do this. But if your credit's already been shot, if you quit paying your credit card bills, here's what happens. And you will get some phone calls. You'll get collectors calling you. But if you just keep saying no, after 180 days, the credit card company, the bank, has to charge off the debt. That's a rule. That's a law, actually. That's a GAAP accounting rule. And the bank will charge off the debt and then sells those loans, those credit card debts, for as low as a nickel on the dollar to people like me. And when we buy them for a nickel on the dollar, we call up the same customer and we're prepared to settle for, you know, 15 cents on the dollar. So a person who is, say, $10,000 in debt on their credit card right now and can't pay the 10 grand because they just don't have it, they might be able to settle with somebody for, say, $1,500. And the problem is the bank won't let them settle with the bank for $1,500. So that's the one thing they can do is nothing. Don't pay your bills. And if you don't pay your bills, eventually they will be sold off to someone else who will settle with you for pennies on the dollar.
Well, that's a great strategy. It's kind of like reverse leverage.
It is exactly that. You know, it's kind of the one step short of bankruptcy. You know, when you file bankruptcy because you're so far in you can't get back out, you know you're going to hurt your credit, but you also know you're going to effectuate a solution. You know, you're going to make a whole bunch of that junk go away. Well, this is a half step. Now, it's certainly right in line with going bankrupt because it's heading down that path, but it may be the one thing that keeps you from filing bankruptcy, and it would be better to have one or two creditors messing up your credit score as wiping out all of them.
Right. Typically, bankruptcy, and I know the bankruptcy law has changed and maybe you don't know the answer, but typically bankruptcy tends to stay on your credit for, what is it now, 7 or 10 years?
It is as long as 10 years that it will continue to show up or haunt you, as they say. And yes, I'm familiar with that. In 1986, we filed bankruptcy. So I know again from experience that is the last straw, last resort, and I don't encourage people to do it unless they just absolutely can't take care of their family, can't take care of their other obligations. There is a higher sense of order here, and that's why the bankruptcy rules were created. You know, not for just to let people run up bills and just say, oh, the heck with it, I'll just walk away from it. No, it's for good, honest, serious, legitimate people who find themselves in a place they never would have imagined.
Sure. And you know, the thing that you just hit on there that people don't realize is that when you start believing that it'll never happen to you, that's when it happens to you.
Oh, and right now, Bert, it's happening to people who have never, ever imagined it can happen to them. See, in the old days, a few years ago, we used to think that people with credit card problems and the people who would think about bankruptcy, well, those are, you know, we would kind of put them in that, well, they must be lazy, or they must not have gotten a good education, or they probably didn't work very hard. And we kind of put them all in a little category, rightly or wrongly. That's kind of the way we do things. But this time around, in this great recession we're in right now, there are people who did it by the rules. They went to school, they studied hard, they got good grades, they went and got a job, they showed up for work every single day of their life, they went and bought a house with a white picket fence, they married the girl next door, they followed every single rule to follow the American dream, and it turned out that maybe some of that wasn't as true as they told us. And now these are people who have never failed before, have never had difficulties before, and now they're unemployed and not able to pay their bills.
You know, something that you just brought up, I think that this generation is one of those generations that hasn't been tested. This economy is their first test.
It is indeed, and I feel so bad for the people going through what they're going through right now. Now, a guy like me, I'm 61 years old, and I have failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded and failed and succeeded, and I have screwed up so many times it's almost pathetic. I'm good at failure. I'm good at screwing up. I'm good at getting knocked down and figuring out how to get back up because I've done it a lot. Now, people who have never had it happen to them, it is the most traumatic thing they may experience in their entire lifetime. And quite frankly, some of them may not know how to deal with it.
Well, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is failure is a good way to succeed.
It is the only way to succeed. And here's a challenge I give everybody on this call. The Forbes 400 is a list that's published every October by Forbes magazine, so you can go online and get it or wherever you might choose to read it. And read the stories of the people who are on the Forbes 400 list. And except for a few people who inherited some money, and there's usually a handful of them on there, the ones who are self-made, every one of them failed at least once. Some of them failed a half a dozen times. Some of them filed bankruptcy three or four times in their life. And that's what it almost takes, failure to succeed.
Well, you know, Walt Disney, I believe, filed bankruptcy four
Indeed.
Or five times.
Indeed.
And on top of that, his best friend, which is the famous Art Linkletter, you know, gave up on him, wouldn't lend him the $1,000 he needed to buy what is now Walt Disney in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, the stories are, you know, I mean, they're by the thousands. So, you know, when I started, I'm a student of this industry because I try to share what it is I've learned along the way. The very reason you and I are on this call today is hoping that maybe somebody will hear something that might have some value in their life. Well, I began looking at all of the reasons people succeed and the reasons people fail, and I found an awful lot of correlation between having failed and learning a lesson and then going to a much higher success than you ever would have been able to go to but for the failure.
Absolutely. Bill Bartman, thank you very much. This is Bert Martinez. Thank you.
And Bert, you're very welcome. Have a great day.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. My next guest, best-selling author of like 9 books, Guy Kawasaki. Guy Kawasaki is a special advisor to Motorola Business Unit of Google. He is also the author of Ape, What the Plus, Enchantment, and 9 other books. Previously, he was the chief evangelist of Apple. Kawasaki has a BA from Stanford University and an MBA from UCLA, as well as an honorary doctorate from Babson College. Guy Kawasaki, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I got a lot of degrees, huh?
You do. But you know what? The good news is that you got a lot of degrees, but you put them to work. You've got like 9 best-selling books. You've done all this other stuff, as opposed to so many people who have many more degrees and don't even write a paper.
Well, you know, it's like an Asian thing.
What does that mean?
It means it's in my freaking DNA. I don't know, whatever.
Gotcha.
I had Tiger Mom and Tiger Dad.
I love it. All right. Well, I have to ask you this. What the heck is a chief evangelist over there at Apple? What is that?
Well, I came back to Apple that second time as a chief evangelist. My job was to maintain the Macintosh and Apple believer cult. So, it's hard to remember way back when, but from 95 to 97, Apple was supposed to die. So I went back kind of in a triage role. Of course, I left too early, but if I had stuck around, I wouldn't be on this show right now because I would be on my yacht and it would be out of a zone where you could reach me. But that's a whole different story. I've never declared bankruptcy. I was listening to your previous speaker, so that's probably why I'm not successful. I haven't bankrupted enough. I didn't get the memo. You're supposed to go bankrupt.
Yeah, I believe that you have to file bankruptcy at least a minimum of 3 times before you get to the, to that stratosphere of success. I mean, I believe Donald Trump is almost there. I think he's filed 2 or 3 times, not sure.
Yeah, well, I guess I missed – I wasn't in class that day.
All right, well, let's talk about this. I want to talk about enchantment.
Okay.
First of all, what – was the motivator to write the book Enchantment?
I love this question. You know why? Because
why?
If the author is honest, you know what the answer is?
What?
Royalty.
Right. Okay, but, so you thought, okay, hey, this might make me money. Let's do it.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm going to give you a better answer than that, but once I heard this story about Tom Clancy. So Tom Clancy was at a press conference for a new book, and some reporter asked him, "What's this book about?" And he said, "It's about $25." So, you know.
Oh, that's good.
I heard that story, and I said, "Man, I gotta have an apocryphal story like that too." So, no. Besides the royalty, but don't get me wrong, you know. Authors are also motivated by money. Besides the royalty, I became a big fan of How to Win Friends and Influence People, and by Dale Carnegie. Everybody knows about that book, but a book that lot fewer people hear about, but I would highly recommend, is a book called Influence by a professor named Bob Cialdini, Cialdini. And that should be required reading for anybody who's an entrepreneur or into sales and marketing. And so I looked at those two books and I said, you know, I've had to enchant people at Apple. I've had to enchant people as an entrepreneur, as a venture capitalist, as an author. I want to take the lessons of Dale Carnegie and Bob Cialdini and add to that social media and write a book about how to enchant people in the digital age. And that's what I did.
Gotcha. All right, well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the pillars of enchantment, specifically here in the digital age.
Yes. So there are 3 pillars of enchantment. Pillar number 1 is likability. I'll give you an example. So when I met Richard Branson in Russia once, he asked me if I flew on Virgin, and I said no. I'm United Airlines Global Services, so I never fly on any other airline. And he got down on his knees and he started polishing my shoes with his jacket. So that's the moment. Yeah, that's the moment I started flying Virgin America. So that's likability. Trustworthiness, you can like somebody but not trust them. So think about Zappos. So Zappos has convinced millions of women to buy shoes without trying them on. Now, you know, wrap your mind around that. If somebody
that
had told
is amazing.
You, yeah, we'll get millions of women to buy shoes without trying them on. What do you think of our business model, guy? I would have told him, you are freaking nuts that no woman would buy shoes like that. And clearly, Zappos has, you know, become trustworthy to women, and it's because they pay shipping both ways. And then for competence, you know, it's my old company. They make great hardware. So if you are competent, high quality, likable, and trustworthy, you will be enchanting.
I love that. So, okay, we have likability, trustworthy, and what?
Competent.
Yes. You know, I love that story about Richard Branson because, you know, not only does it show his sense of humor, but it also shows that, you know, he's still, here's a guy who's phenomenally wealthy, and but yet he is he's willing to promote his brand.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, whether you fly Virgin Airline or whether I fly Virgin Airline, it's not going to change his life. But here's a guy who, again, like you said, he got down and started shining your shoes. Instant likability. He breaks the ice. This guy is fun. This guy is just like me. Boom.
Yep.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
All right. So now I have to ask you, having that experience with Richard Branson, would you consider flying Virgin Airline?
Oh, I fly Virgin Airline. If any place I'm going, if there is a Virgin flight, I will take Virgin over anything else. And coming out of SFO, you know, it starts with the terminal. Terminal 2 is the best terminal at SFO. Lots of tables, lots of electrical plugs. You know, like the whole place is as if you're in a red carpet club. So the terminal's good. The airplane's good. There's Wi-Fi on every plane. You know, you can order from your seat. They got, I mean, I just love that airline. But they don't fly everywhere. But yeah, for example, if I'm flying from San Francisco and I need to go to Miami, I will fly Virgin to go to Fort Lauderdale instead. I just like the airline that much.
That's interesting. All right. Well, let's talk about this. I want to kind of dig into this a little bit deeper. So tell me, what's the difference between selling and enchantment?
Okay. So with selling, typically the person has his best interest at heart. So I make a sale, I make a commission, you know, I make my salary. Enchantment and you know, evangelism, you have the other person's best interest at heart. So you are selling a dream of a Macintosh or, you know, some service or whatever it is. And so, yes, you will benefit, but the reason why I would tell you to buy a Macintosh if I were working for Apple is because I think that Macintosh is the best computer for you. So I'm trying to look out for you, and it happens that by looking out for you, I also look out for me. But you know, that's why it's very hard to go from one company to another if you truly are enchanting and evangelistic. Because, you know, you can't be pimping a Macintosh one day and then pimping a Dell the next day, because, you know, you cannot really believe that both computers are equally good for a person. You have to pick one.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? And to illustrate your example a little bit more, is what you mentioned, Sappos. It's definitely not in any company's best interest to pay for shipping both ways. That was purely for the customer's best interest, which made Sappos this company that we all talk about.
Which made them successful, so it worked out, right? I mean, that's the whole point, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, here's a company that was thinking more about their customers, and by doing that, they set themselves apart from the herd, right?
Yeah.
And they created this culture that is renowned literally all over the world, and again, and they become successful, which is all what we all want to do. As you said, we want to write a good book and make money. In this case, we want to build a big company and make money, but they put the customers first. I love that example. I love that. All right, let me ask you this. Besides Sappos, any other good examples of enchanting companies that come to mind for you?
Well, I mean, of course, there's Apple. I think Apple to this day enchants its customers. I think Harley-Davidson enchants its customers, you know, maybe
really?
A different kind of customer. But I would say Audi enchants its customers. I think that the Big Green Egg, the barbecue, I think that's a very enchanting product. So, you know.
Okay,
you
I got to ask you, what is it that enchants you about the Big Green Egg?
I love the Big Green Egg. I mean, it, you know, it's like, it's just so old school, right? There's no freaking gas outlet. You don't flick on a flame or turn a switch. And you control heat by, you know, changing the vents on the top and the bottom. And it's like, you know, to use that properly, it's probably a 4 or 5 hour project. I mean, I love that thing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And what's interesting, the circle of life almost. They're bringing back the art of real barbecuing, of real grilling, right? Because, like you said, it's old-fashioned. You got to know how to adjust the vents and do all this other stuff as opposed to just turning on flames.
Yeah. This past weekend, I barbecued, and I went even older school. So I went to Osh, and I bought, like 8 bricks, and then I bought a grill, and then I made a wood fire. And when the wood fire went down to coals, I barbecued on top of that. So I went even older school than Big Green Egg. I was like mountain man. I mean, it's as close as I get to camping, by the way. But, get me started on barbecue. That's like a whole, male
thing. Well, there you
thing.
Go. That'll be your next book.
That's right.
The Art of Barbecuing. The
Killing
the
and Cooking.
The enchanting art. What's that?
Killing and Cooking.
Killing and Cooking. All right. So let me ask you this, because you are followed on everything, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. You have this massive following. How can you use social media to enchant people?
You use social media to enchant people by providing value. And value is not my cat rolled over. Value is this is a great link to barbecue recipes. This is a great link to a photo essay about Ray Bradbury. This is a link to a very interesting story about how, people who drink diet soda weigh more. I mean, whatever it is. So you're providing value to their social media graph so that they follow you and they tell other people to follow you. And that's the key to enchanting people with social media.
Well, because I know on your Twitter, you are, you're constantly putting out different things, the ends of the road around the world, and you have a link to a picture or the story, illustrated alphabet of creativity. Again, you're just putting stuff out there that you think might serve your almost 1.4 million followers. You're not concerned about anything else other than putting out, like you said, information, useful information.
Yes. I am trying to be a source of interesting stuff. That's what I do.
I love it. Interesting stuff. I like that. All right. So let's talk about how to enchant your boss. What are the steps you think that somebody can enchant their boss? How did you enchant your bosses there at Apple?
I don't know if I did, but anyway, I know how now. So here, the key to enchanting your boss is that when your boss asks you to do something, you drop everything else and you do it. It is literally that simple. The same can be applied to enchanting your wife. When your wife asks you to do something, you just drop everything and do what she tells you. So that's the key. I mean, it might not be fair, might not be optimal, but, man, I tell you, it's effective.
Sure. Well, that's right. I mean, because ultimately, we are, we're going to go to the people, back to what you said, the three pillars, people that we like, that we trust, and that we feel are competent. And if you are constantly unavailable to your boss or your wife, that could make that relationship a little bit tough to develop, right? That could really come to affect you. On the other hand, if you are able to, again, develop that relationship, through serving your boss or your wife, you enchant them forever. You become their go-to person.
You should write a book about this.
Man. Enchantment Part 2, the untold story.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? What's amazing to me is these concepts, these three pillars, don't seem that hard.
Nope.
Why do you think so many people screw it up? I mean, one of the things I detest more than anything is these people who get on there and try to cram stuff down your throat, whether it's on Twitter or on Facebook. They're just trying to sell you something. No relationship whatsoever, and that's almost, I think, a reflection of what's happening out in the real world, don't you think?
Yep, and that's why many people are not enchanting, because they're too short-sighted and narrow-minded. And, I think people should default to yes, meaning that whenever you meet other people, you should be always thinking, how can I help the other person, not what can this person do for me? And by doing that, you will enchant people and, you know, you will get more done for you.
Sure, sure. You know what, and I want to end on this note because we're out of time, and I've just enjoyed spending time with you, and I'd love to have you back. What you just said reminded me oh my goodness, now I dropped it. She, you know what, she worked for no money, and she helped the people out in India. She was a nun and
Mother Teresa?
Whatever, and Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
Wasn't she enchanting? I mean, she just served. She just gave useful service, useful information, and she was, again, world-renowned. She was beloved by many.
I think that she goes far beyond enchanting. Enchanting is like guys like you and me. We ain't Mother Teresa. I hate to break it to you. You know, let me be subtle. We suck compared to her.
I love it. Yes, I agree with you. We're no Mother Teresa, but again, just as an example of the uber enchanting person. Guy Kawasaki, thank you so much for stopping by.
Take care, man.
Look forward to having you back on the show again and talk about your next book, Ape.
All right, take care.
All righty, sir. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Guys, that's it. We're wrapping it up. Great stuff by Mr. Guy Kawasaki and the rest of our guests. Good information there by Bill Bartman. As always, thank you so much for stopping by and taking time to listen to our show. We'll talk to you later.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.